Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most.
Whether it's reactions,
matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
It's Mike Shope.
Hey, put a little... I never get this line out the first time. It's not even good. Hey, put a little bit more in there, cowboy.
And the bulldog.
What's your degree in?
Kicking ass and taking names.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I think we have to, while there's still time before 2025, which apparently is actually going to be a year, to figure one or two things out. One being, let's agree on the definition of a bad beat. Some of you will be familiar with Scott Van Pelt. I think maybe the best thing he does is that bad beat segment that I hear about or see online the next day from ESPN, where, you know, random games, three or four games from different sports. You have Team X plus 16.5 in college basketball or something. And then, you know, they're even ahead in the game, but it's an easy cover, and then just get stupid at the end, and they end up losing. Things like that. That's a bad beat. In fantasy football, it would be if you needed, I don't know, I don't have a specific example of a player. Let's take James Conner, maybe, from the weekend, or even some better would be somebody that wasn't already hurt, and you need like 4 points to win, and the guy gets hurt before he gets there. Like, he has 3 points, then he's out for the game, especially if maybe it's more because the team doesn't need the game. They're protecting the player rather than, you know, like ambulance carted off, you know, something not as obvious. That's especially bad. Team just taking it easy there. That's a bad beat. If you lose by 0.2 just because it was close, that's a tough loss. That's a close game. That's not necessarily a bad beat. Bad beat has to bring with it something else. It has to bring with it something that just you can't believe that you even bother living, playing, but living. That's a bad beat. Not every, it's only to say, not every close loss is a bad beat. A guy who pulled off a pretty close win, although I'm not sure how much it meant to him, is our friend Jeremy White here from WGR, who, I don't know, this is going to sound snarky, but his is the team named the Snarks. Congrats on third.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, we're going to learn from it. We're going to learn from it, Mike. You know, every loss is an opportunity to learn. I actually had conceded the game to Lou, who's in our league, last night, because I'd seen Amon-Ra St. Brown go off. A little bit. So he said, "You're not out of it yet." And then I went and checked, and I was up by 0.2, and I held on for a 0.2 victory. So
yes.
I was happy to do so. I was really in the dumps on, you know, you want to talk about bad beats. I had two third-place games last night. In one of them, I was playing against Amon-Ra St. Brown. In the other, I had Amon-Ra St. Brown. And for a very brief period, it looked like I was going to lose them both. Like he was going to hit the exact sweet spot, so I lost both of them. But I did win by 0.2, so I'm happy about that for third place.
I was in a final that I had almost, or basically, yes, given up on because I needed, I think it was 41 from Brock Purdy, and then he was going to get it. Like, all I needed was the garbage time touchdown that Dobbs ran in. He was at 38. before that injury. So is that a bad beat? No, because it was not reasonable to expect Brock Purdy to score 41 points. But I did feel like I was going to pull it off.
We had somebody call in this morning. His league still had kickers, and he lost the championship by less than a point because the Lions kicker missed an extra point.
Oh, well,
That's a tough one.
That's pretty bad.
That's pretty tough.
I mean, it's not like the old days where extra points were closer to automatic, but it's still not great. You know, these best ball tournaments that I play in, you might do a couple of these. I have friends who, so once you get to, I had one with Bulldog that was like this. Once you advance to the fantasy playoff weeks, week 15 for starters, your scores reset. So no matter how, hopefully for you, if you dominated, you got a regular season prize. But, you know, maybe you didn't. Anyway, you get to week 15, and then you go back to zero. And if you lose there, like, that kind of sucks because you might have had, I mean, Chris and I had a team that was, I think, 14th overall out of 16,000. And we won, we split $100 three ways, ultimately, because we finished third out of 12 in week 15 when you needed top two. Bad beat. Not exactly, but I have friends, I was going to say, who go look up the teams that they lost the weeks before to see how they would have done in week 17, and that's flat-out masochism. I mean, I would spare yourself that agony.
Sure. I didn't exactly have – we can all decide the level of bad beat, should you have expected – is it just bad luck versus a bad beat? Bad luck is not exactly as bad. I would contest that Chuba Hubbard going off for 35 points against me in my game with you, that stung. And in concert with Trey McBride having his lowest scoring game of his life, maybe. I mean, we had some tough times.
I ran so pure in that league.
Yes, you did.
I mean, Hubbard against you and then...
Neighbors in the championship.
Well, at least Neighbors is Neighbors. How about Olamide Zaccheaus for 25?
Yes.
You know? I started Zaccheaus over Parker Washington because what else would... I mean, I don't know. Worked out. Against Joe's McLaurin, 1-for-5. But I didn't bring you on to just sort of bury you in fantasy stuff. Tuesday, it's still Tuesday, even if it is New Year's Eve. It's time for the reverse AFC Power Rankings powered by Empire Electric, your residential neighborhood electrician. Visit EmpireElectricians.com. Appreciate Jeremy, like Joe, last week working a double, sitting in here with me for a few minutes in Bulldog's absence. New page today. I'll be curious for your analysis, like what's worst here? You know, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 AFC teams on either 3 or 4 wins. And you could rank these a lot of different ways. Who for you is team number 16?
Well, right, because there's a level of, especially at the end of the season, I don't know how much you guys generally factor this in. It's almost like we're doing a dynasty ranking on some level. Because I'm inclined to say, like, the Raiders, what do the Raiders even have going on for them? But they have 4 wins, and there's some teams with 3 wins. Tennessee is doing something unprecedented this week where they're playing both of their quarterbacks. Like, if you have 2 quarterbacks, you have none. They don't even have the young guy to play. They're just going to play the 2 guys on the roster for, I don't know, just for fun. So I'm kind of inclined to say Tennessee. I don't really know what they've got going on that is good for them. The quarterback situation isn't good. The weapons situation it's okay. They spent a lot of money on Calvin Ridley. Tony Pollard, Tajay Spears. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of on Tennessee being pretty far down here because what do they got going on for them?
You know what else is maybe not good this year? The draft itself. Finding your next quarterback.
Yeah, I've seen that, like, Drake May, who the Patriots, if they have the first pick, they're in good shape because Drake May would be the number one quarterback in this draft quite easily. And, in fact, like, 4 or 5 of last year's quarterbacks would have been number one in this draft. So
maybe
they would easily get out of that one spot with a trade. And the existence of May makes me want to put them ahead of a couple of these other teams. So that's why I'm leaning on Tennessee.
You kind of said it already at the beginning. You get this late in the year, being bad is a little bit good. You know, you'd rather be 3 or 4 wins than a team like the Saints or somebody with 5. Because the difference in the draft position is so stark, you and I don't need to have that conversation. But one other thing about a lot of these teams in the AFC at the bottom of the standings is they all have coaching issues. And maybe Tennessee is included in that. Somehow Doug Peterson lasted the year. But Raiders, Patriots with newer coaches, there are questions. Jets are going to have somebody else. The one team that probably has their guy is Cleveland in this bunch with Stefanski. I mean, two-time coach of the year anyway. I will go Raiders here. Zach?
I'm on Raiders too, kind of the dynasty idea. I don't think them winning this late in the year is any good for them.
I like this pick. I mentioned the Raiders off the bat, but I didn't want to overstep here as the guest. I think Raiders is a good answer, even though they have more wins than these three-win teams.
The Raiders have a cachet. It's kind of twisted now, sort of gnarly, but that the Titans will never have, or most of these teams. You know, where you can get, say, Aaron Rodgers, make a move like that. Maybe he wants to play for you. Can you imagine him wanting to play for Tennessee at this point, or someone of the sort? All right, Raiders at 16, 15. Jeremy's on the Titans. That's the rule. I'm fine with that. I mean, it is New Year's Eve. I don't want to spend my whole life parsing the Raiders and the Titans. We have better teams to talk about. 14. Jets.
Yeah, Jets.
What do they do? And who decides?
Where does Garrett Wilson factor in that? How about that Sauce Gardner story about with T. Higgins? Did you see that Instagram post?
No. Okay. I almost always say no to that question.
Fair. I mean, I'm not one that sees them on Instagram. It's like one of the aggregators would send it out. I'm. It's one of those ones where you see it and you think that's got to be fake, but I think it's not fake. I don't know. I should do some more research here. But for the purposes, I'll tell you what it said.
Basically, just go with it. Yeah.
Sure. Someone told him, make sure you tell T. Higgins to come to New York to be a Jet. And he responded, I will not be telling him to do that.
Oh, Gardner said that.
Gardner said that. Like, oh, that's pretty tough. That's a scene.
How about the Bengals? They didn't even get Chase done this year. They're 5% to make it. Higgins walks. And Chase, they still have that issue. They probably cost themselves a lot of money with the year he had, best receiver in the league this year. My friends like New England for Higgins. Like, they'll just blank check T. Higgins, but I kind of like the Chargers idea for him.
Yeah, the Chargers need a little bit more help. New England has to do whatever it takes to get as many weapons as possible, and they've slow played that position for a long time. They've been bad at drafting it. They tried to trade for Diggs. They tried to sign Calvin Ridley over and over again. They've tried to get quarterback, and they just can't do it. Now with May showing a little bit, I wonder if it's a little bit easier for them to get that.
13 for me would be Cleveland, because while these other teams, not the Patriots, but these other teams will want a new quarterback next year probably, the Browns still have different limitations there, even if Watson misses the whole year. Because he's still on their books. Like, he still exists. So I don't think they'd have the same claim to, here's our new, say Darnold comes free somehow, which I don't think he will. But a move like that, unless they just sort of dump Watson, which financially after this move, they're not going to be ready to do yet. So they're still in a really bad spot. Maybe Garrett wants to leave. And, like, their defense was supposed to be good. Their offensive line was supposed to be. None of that happened. The Chubb thing is over. They're down bad. Anybody else on Cleveland?
Yeah,
you good?
Cleveland. Will they trade Myles Garrett?
I think so.
Yeah. The thing about Cleveland is, you know, the Watson contract and just existence, I almost feel like they should operate like a college team that has been placed on probation. Or stripped of scholarships. Like, fine, all right, you've lost scholarships. You have this big weight around you, but operate otherwise like you're a regular team. Draft a quarterback. Why wouldn't you just draft the way to offset all that money is to have one that's cheap. So I would draft a quarterback. I would just start moving on as if he doesn't exist, but I don't know if the owners are going to let him do that. So Cleveland here, I mean, yeah, it if
works.
You're a Browns fan, you would think it's hopeless, especially – watching Baker Mayfield succeed as much as he has.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that specifically. Not to mention Tyrod Taylor
in
garbage time roles. But yeah, Mayfield for sure. That one hurts. 12.
Jacksonville
or New England?
Yeah, you probably have to go New England. They have May and so little else. that they want May benched a lot. I mean, they want him kept off the field. Here's Jerod Mayo saying they're considering it because they want to keep him healthy. They had so little around him, they were afraid to put him in at the beginning of the season. And now that we've reached the end of the season, and they have so little around him, they're still afraid to play him. Ben Volin wrote today in the Boston Globe that they have to bench him. They have to not risk him because there's nothing to do. And I saw another writer for the Globe call for Mayo's firing for keeping May in late in a blowout while the other starters sat. So here he is. He's the prize piece, and they continue to just kind of, I don't know, throw him out there. So
yeah, they can't seem to figure out what they should do.
Yeah.
I was shocked he was playing in that game. I saw him get hurt early, like, there goes this game.
Yeah.
And to think he might play this one against the Bills, why?
And Alex Van Pelt said 3 weeks ago the mission was to get him out of the season healthy. So you've got a good piece here, and to play him, you know, what for? So let's go New England just because they have nothing but May, and I think Jacksonville still has some pieces.
I will say Jacksonville, actually. I think it's close, too. But they'll both maybe have new coaches. Jacksonville, I think, will. And it's similar. It's similar, but May is promising at this point, whereas Lawrence, it's close to this is never going to work. I think it's closer to that with him. It's not that for May at all. So Jacksonville is my pick at 12.
I'm going to go New England here. I do think New England's going to keep Mayo, and with Jacksonville, I think the Bears' job has gone from like maybe one of the more attractive jobs to just kind of toxic, where Jacksonville, I don't think, has hit that point yet, so that might be the most attractive job. And if Ben Johnson does want to leave, I think that's the way you fix Lawrence, and I do still think they're somewhat attractive.
I think there's something that I wouldn't want as an owner, having my coach and quarterback almost have the exact same name, too. Like, what if Josh Allen's name were Josh McDermott, but it was like M-A-C? Can you imagine how annoying this would be every day talking about it? Like, who are we talking? Just every time you'd have to use the whole name? This is the stuff right here. New Year's Eve on WGR.
Oh, yeah.
Reverse AFC power rankings. Jacksonville at 11. Gotta be. Right? Who else would it be? Well, 10, Colts.
Yes, easy. They maybe deserve worse.
Yeah.
They maybe deserve worse. I mean, Richardson goes out, goes back in. He can't stay healthy. Their defense gets shown up by Drew Lock in a game that the Giants inexplicably won and tried to win. You know, I know, integrity, such, blah, 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 cost themselves. But, yeah, the Colts probably deserve worse. They continue to fold at the end of seasons.
And they're not in a great place at all. You know, they are really – actually, yes, they are sort of in the same conversation with the Jaguars and maybe other teams. Quarterback, maybe, but it's iffy. Coach, I don't know. They're talking today. Albert Breer's talking about a GM change. Indianapolis, with that owner, what can they do?
Yeah, they've committed money and to good players, too. They have good players on their offensive side. They have good players on defense, a couple at least. Like, they've committed. It's almost like a lot of the roster is in win-now mode, and the coach is, I think the coach is okay, but they just can't get it going from a quarterback standpoint to get Richardson. First off, he's not consistent, and he's also not consistently in the lineup, and I'd imagine that's really tough for any coach.
Yep. Okay. 9. Houston.
Yes. Good with it.
Houston, Tennessee this week. What do you expect from Houston? Like, there's a school of thought that they're just, maybe they won't be able to, but like want to have a good day. It's been a long time since they've had a good day, and they'll be hosting next week. Who knows?
Momentum, have a good day, get the stink out of your mouth, well, the taste out of your mouth. Mike Tomlin said that about this week, that they want to get the taste out of their mouth from their last couple of losses when they play Cincinnati. Could Houston do that as well? Sure. I think so. They still have good pass rushers. Houston's got pieces. Mm-hmm. I mean, a number of their pieces are missing, Tank Dell. I mean, that season, you know, people around here want to take a lot of shots at Diggs, and I understand why, but when he went down, their offense really started to, well, suffer.
Right.
And Nico Collins missed time, and Tank Dell, like that three-headed monster at receiver at the start of the season, it looked okay, and then it never really came back again. Once Nico Collins went out with a hamstring injury against the Bills, the three of them never saw the field together again.
Happy to win that Shopes and Dreams with 5 points for Mixon. sorry, Brent. I went right back to the wound on that one. 8, Miami?
Yes.
7. Bengals?
I want...
Do you like one of the playoff teams less? One of the other playoff teams less?
Sure. Sure. I want...
The Bengals are favored in Pittsburugh on Saturday night.
Good, good. Bengals have more to play for, so that's a part of this. I want to consider Pittsburgh here for a couple reasons. They have built into them, once you get to the playoffs, it's a different animal. And they've lost three straight games to playoff teams, right, by double digits. And it's in part because Russell Wilson is a sack machine. He takes sacks. He and Justin Fields are the two worst at it in the sport and have been for a while. And I feel like that's such a fatal flaw to have this time of year. Wilson does not really extend plays. He walks into sacks. Like, I might put Pittsburgh below the Chargers and the Broncos, and certainly below Cincinnati. Like, who would you rather play if you're a Bills fan? I know they've got some pieces on defense that could be scary, but Pickens is important to them, and he maybe doesn't try. And, you know, like, I want to say Pittsburgh.
You and I have always been simpatico on Mike Tomlin. Let's just, with the whole thing about how they never have a losing season, and he's won a Super Bowl, there is just never not a Pittsburgh Steelers season, though, with this sort of controversy going on. Defensive side of the ball, too, but Pickens. They have lost their last three games by a combined 90-40 against three of the five best teams in the league, probably, Philly, Baltimore, and Kansas City. Pittsburgh, I'm fine with it. It's not that they have nothing to play for.
Right.
I think, I said yesterday to Sal, I think the Bills' best chance at a Super Bowl is if Pittsburgh draws Baltimore 3-6, which means Pittsburgh loses and the Chargers win this week. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's just not, if I'm the Ravens, who I want to see ever. It's Pittsburgh. I'll play anybody else.
Yeah, I did just say all those mean things about Pittsburgh, but the game they just played, there was a lot of fumble luck involved in that game. The ball hit the ground three times. Baltimore got it all three of those times.
Yep.
So that game could be closer.
Six, Cincinnati? Or one of the AFC West teams?
Yeah.
You're gonna tell me you'd rather play Denver than Cincinnati? I would say the same thing.
Right. I mean, I don't want to be, I don't want to sell Bengals fear, but it's about what you can do, and can you be great at one thing? I think Denver and the Chargers are obviously much more balanced than Cincinnati, but I'm not one to sit here and tell you balance is what matters. It's can you do something that others can't stop, and the Bengals maybe can do that, so give me Denver, sure.
All right. Denver. Nick Costos tweeted about a half an hour ago, what's the line if it's Cincinnati at Buffalo? And I said, Bills -4. And then a few minutes later, he retweeted that. A few minutes later, he said every response he got was between 4 and 6.
Okay.
I don't know what he's thinking. He wanted to work with that. I know he's not a fan of the Bills as their like chances of winning a championship, BetQL, Nick Costos, but I don't know.
Pull up now Ben Baldwin's market-derived tiers. You know, basically you can do the math on what a spread would be on a neutral field between the opponents, so I'll work that. He has it at 4. Yeah, 4 points.
There it is.
Well, the Bills would be home, so that's 5.5. Ben Baldwin has 5.5. Okay. If that's the matchup.
Okay. Of course, the Bengals have won a playoff game here for sort of the feel of it. Let's rip through the rest. Five. Got the Chargers here or the Bengals?
Denver.
We just used Denver.
Oh, sorry.
I put them at 6.
Sorry. Chargers, Broncos, I'm confusing there.
Yeah.
Give me Chargers.
I'm on the Bengals.
No, I'm on the Bengals.
Okay.
For L.A.? Not to load the game here,
sure.
But.
Sure.
Three?
Herbert's looking better. Herbert does more than he ever did. He runs more than he ever did. He can play. I mean, yeah, fine. Herbert 4. Sure. Chargers.
For me, the Bills are at 3. If they get the Ravens at home, which they would, in a 2-3, that's a huge edge. But I think the Ravens look more dangerous by a little bit. And I would not put Kansas City here because I think they're looking better. And the advantage they have here with the bye is massive.
I would put Baltimore here.
I'll go Baltimore. I think they're two up and down for me.
Okay. Two?
Bills.
Bills, 1 Chiefs. Back on the bottom. Jared, what are you doing tonight?
Having a few friends over, so, you know, we're cleaning the house and the furious nature of, you know, putting things away. while kids then take things out and make a mess while you're trying to clean. So, but I don't know, asleep by 10:30 probably. We're going to do, I don't know why I didn't do this earlier as an adult. We're going to do one of those fake ball drops at maybe 7 o'clock for the kids. And I feel like I should have been doing that my entire life.
I like that.
Just, you know, celebrate London's New Year's and then go to bed.
London's, or you can find an old one on YouTube. It'll look very much the same.
Exactly.
I will not see you then at our wives' workplace.
No, not tonight, no.
Very good. Happy New Year, Jer. Thank you.
Happy New Year. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Reverse power rankings on WGR, powered by Empire Electric, your residential neighborhood electrician. Visit empireelectricians.com. Sal next. The latest with the Bills and some playoff stuff. Brad Ryder at 4, our former colleague. Brad sent me a great text the other day that I've been thinking about a lot, and I was flattered by it. It's Bills related. We will talk about it and more with Brad, who is off to UB and the Bahamas Bowl later in the week. I think he said he was leaving tomorrow. And then Ross Tucker today as well. Happy New Year. Mike Shope here, WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special capaccio for you, eh?
Yes. Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away. Get away from my wife with that.
What's the matter, carpaccio, no good?
What? What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
They like carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a carpaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
You go on, well, Bulldog would call it X. You go on Twitter today, you don't see a lot of breaking news with the Bills, or even really much around the NFL. New Year's Eve, just like last week, the holiday on Wednesday, tomorrow. What you do see, if you're a Bills fan, is references to 7 years ago tonight. New Year's Eve 2017, the official end of the 17-year Bills playoff drought. And Sal, do you think this is an overstatement? No Bills fan will forget it.
No, I think it's right. It's just an incredible moment for the organization, for the fan base, for the media, for anybody, for the NFL. It really was. And for me to be right there and be a part of it, something I'll never forget, I'll tell you that. But no doubt, I mean, 17 years, it was a long time. And I think it was just so unexpected, too, that particular year. Right, Mike? You know, I mean, they started off, you know, well, and then they had a dip, then they came back and they made it. But going into that season, it was, okay, we're bracing for an 18th year, and then they're going to reset and probably draft a quarterback the next year. And for it to come the way it did, I think made it even more special.
Two things that are interesting about it. One is, of course, that it was not a Bills play that broke the, you know, that made the outcome happen. The Bills had already won the game. It wasn't like they didn't play, but you have the images are of them in their locker room and then watching the Tyler Boyd catch for Cincinnati in Baltimore. And I like too, Sal, that because it really is only making the wild card, it's good that they've had so much more success since. You know, with the Sabres, they've got this seemingly interminable drought, and we refer back to it's like it's marked by making the playoffs, which isn't really that great of an accomplishment. It's okay, it's good, it's a starting point, but you certainly want to strive for greater. And I think it feels good remembering that night where the Bills were in Miami 7 years ago tonight, because they have had much more success since. It does feel like it was really the start of something.
Yeah, for sure. And I've thought about hopefully when, not if, when the Sabres do break the playoff drought, and like what that kind of moment is, because when will it be? Will it be they clinch a spot in late March? Do they clinch a spot on the last day of the season? And what that particular, you know, kind of reaction is going to be. I've thought about that, and I don't think it will approach the level of what it was for the Bills. You know, NFL and football, and you know, there's less teams that get in. I mean, I know there's more now, and it's still, you know, it was 12 at the time, 6 in each conference. So I don't think so. The other thing I thought about today, Mike, in a bit was the Jets are at 14 right now, you know, and the Bills, this was 17 for them. And I think about, man, Jets fans, like if you, what have I told you, you have to wait another 3 years, because, you know, what it was like in Buffalo. We didn't know when it would end, right? Buffalo drew 14 years and, you know, 15 years, 16 years, nobody knew. Could have been 3-4 years. But I thought about that today, too, where their drought is and, you know, not knowing if and when they're going to break theirs, and thinking about it was still 3 years longer for us here in Buffalo.
Right. It wouldn't be the longest ever, right? This the Bills 17, or when you, I go to Wikipedia for that, and you get like different kinds of droughts, Super Bowl droughts, playoffs, divisional round, these kinds of things. Do you happen to know what the longest playoff one is?
I think it might have been the Cardinals until Jake Plummer came along, and then they, I think, let me see. I have a, actually, I do have a Cardinals, but it's not even that. It was even before that. I have, first thing that shows up, St. Louis Cardinals, now Arizona, and Washington, now Washington Commanders, tied for the dubious record of longest playoff drought in NFL history. Cardinals, 49-74. Washington, 46-71. Each went 25 years. I remember a long one, though, for the St. Louis slash Phoenix slash Arizona Cardinals, that they finally broke it in the late 90s.
97.
I think that was a long one, I remember.
Mm-hmm. 25, like you said, Pittsburgh went 24 around the same time until like Bradshaw. Then New Orleans went 20 until 1986. And five teams had 17, including the Bills. Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. I just referenced earlier, like, what the schedule this week is. Can you remind us, with New Year's tomorrow, what is the Bills' schedule for this week?
Yeah, they'll be having a, kind of a normal schedule this week. Now, it'll most likely be a walkthrough tomorrow, but we'll get media from head coach Sean McDermott. We'll get our first injury report of the week. So it kind of looks different than last week. Last week was Christmas. This week's New Year's, but a little bit of a change. We did not hear from anyone today. The team was basically off. So it's a normal week as far as, you know, media is concerned, and then back at it on Thursday for what would be a normal practice to watch and talk to players afterwards.
We went over some of the news yesterday with respect to this game Sunday, who might play, who might not. I don't think we mentioned Micah Hyde there, though, but was it not said yesterday that he would not be back here?
That's correct. He won't play in this game. That's correct. Yeah, so just clarifying what you mean by back here. He's still on the team, and he's still going to be a part of the team going forward. And I don't know what that means for the playoffs. It looks like to me, Mike, that Micah Hyde is a break glass in case of emergency safety for the playoffs, because I would think that if you'd want him to play, you might want to get him on the field at some point before then, instead of that not having to be his first action. But yes, Sean McDermott did clarify when specifically asked yesterday, Josh Reed asked him, you know, does getting a look at guys include Micah Hyde? Will he play? He said, no, he will not play.
What is the lay of the land at safety now? They survived some of the injuries, but Hamlin coming back, Rapp back, Bishop, your thoughts on him recently?
Mm. So Sean did say that DeMar Hamlin and wide receiver Curtis Samuel, they have missed a couple of weeks here, I think 2-3 weeks, maybe in DeMar's case, but he said that, they could both be back this week, and they'd like to get both of them some run before the playoffs, get some reps in. So we could see that happening, depending how the week goes. Wouldn't be surprised to see both DeMar Hamlin and or Curtis Samuel playing. Now, as far as safety is concerned, yes, Rapp came back. Now you get DeMar Hamlin back. He's been the starting safety. I don't think they would go to Cole Bishop as a starter, simply because DeMar has played well this year, and he's been there for so much of the year, and the experience matters, and now you're going into the playoffs, and I think it matters even more, especially to them. But I do like how Cole Bishop has progressed here. I think that they, and actually what I really like about Cole Bishop is I think it gives Bobby Babich options when Cole Bishop is out there. I think he has been very good when they've kind of snuck him up into the box. He comes off. He can set the edge sometimes. Even he can get into the box as a run defender. They do have options. Now DeMar, that is not taking anything away from him. He's played really well, and he can be a run supporter, no doubt. But I think the way the Bills want to play is to have those two deep safeties, keep everything in front of you, like kind of they've been doing most of the year. But I think that they feel comfortable if they have to go to Cole Bishop. But what I like is mostly, like I said, if you go to Cole Bishop, he is a guy that really you can kind of use a little bit differently and move up a little bit. And maybe there's some sort of role for him like that going forward.
Mm-hmm. By the way, so at the start of that, you mentioned Samuel as well as somebody that is trending up. What kind of chances would you put on Samuel becoming relevant in the playoffs? I mean, yesterday we had the conversation about how they have 13 different receivers or players that have caught touchdown passes this year. He is one of them, with his one in the game against the Chiefs. that there's been the narrative all year that he just was never right physically. He had a toe injury in August. I don't know. Is there room for Samuel to become relevant here?
There is. I think at this point, it's more hope than it is actually, you know, kind of seeing it happen. Yeah, more hope than logic. That's a good way to put it, because I've thought for a while, okay, maybe, you know, you get him right, he gets in the playoffs, and now all of a sudden, hey, he's making plays for you and doing things for you that you kind of envisioned coming into the year that he just hasn't been. But, I mean, it's 18 weeks, 17 games. If it hasn't happened in some capacity now, I don't think that suddenly we're just going to see it. It'd be great for the Bills, I will tell you that. It would really help their offense. You were able to get something like that from him, but I just don't know if that's going to be the case. So I think that's more hoping that could come to fruition. I mean, that Kansas City game, the one he scored, the end that you're referencing, like, that was the game. Like, he started, okay, here we go, Curtis Samuel. And, you know, if you could get that kind of production and the way that they used him in that game, I think the Bills would love that. I just don't know if that's realistic at this point.
5 for 58 and a score in that game. And if there's an injury, then maybe the odds of this would go up. But without one, we're not so sure. I don't believe Samuel has ever appeared in a postseason game. He's been in the league for 8 years. Four with Carolina. One of those teams might have made it, but he didn't play in a postseason game. And then three with Washington. So I think this would be his first if he gets, you know, if he's active next week.
He's the NFL's Jeff Skinner.
He is the NFL's Jeff Skinner. Yes, with Buffalo ties. Would you believe it?
That's right.
Okay. So I texted you that I had some trivia today. So I got a great text from our old colleague, Brad Ryder, old in that he used to work here. He's younger than me, 3 years to the day, if you care. And he, like myself, and I think you, has, you know, spent some time watching old games.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he just texted me, for me, this came very randomly. Who do you think, if you think about it, who did the best job in Bill's playoff history as a color commentator? That's not the perfect way to phrase the question, but he wondered if I had a thought on, like, who was the best performance by a color commentator in a Bills playoff game all time? And, like, such a specific, wild, fun question if you're like me.
Is the question referring to, like, in a one, like, wow, that one game he was great? Or,
yes.
So, if I take the whole body of work throughout the history of the playoff games?
No, just one game. He basically wanted to know if I had, like, a particular performance that came to mind. And so I didn't, but when I thought about it, I said, you know what, Brad? Bill Walsh at Bill's Raiders seems like maybe he was great, although I can't quote anything from that game, but I just sort of gave him that. He's like, that's exactly the guy and game I was thinking of from 51-3. So I know, Brad, this is all just a preface to, unless you have a thought on that specifically, but he wanted to talk about this some more and some of these old games and everything like that. I thought yes, it's New Year's Eve, but I put some work in here today and just chronicled every broadcast team that the Bills have ever had for a playoff game since the merger. I couldn't find the AFL games.
Well, I will tell you the one that comes to mind, and I was not a big fan of his, but just because of the game and the circumstance, Todd Christensen.
The comeback.
During the comeback.
Yep.
Right? Like, I mean, it's just his voice sticks out to me a bit because it was the comeback.
Right.
And, you know, and I wasn't a big Todd Christensen, like, guy. I wasn't a big fan of his as an analyst. But that game specifically was so big that I think about that game sometimes.
Mm-hmm. That is the only... He was on the sideline for maybe even the Super Bowls against Dallas or one of them. Mm. And please don't take it personally when I did not include the sideline reporters in my, like, little spreadsheet here. But three...
No, you said color analyst. That's okay.
I did. Three Bills playoff games in history have had three men in the booth.
Three Bills playoff games in history have had three men in the booth.
Yes.
Okay.
You want this one?
Well, I'm going to guess one of them would be Super Bowl 25 because that was ABC.
Right.
And they did a three-man booth for Monday Night Football all the time, so that would translate into Al Michaels, Frank Gifford, and Dan Dierdorf.
That's correct.
Okay.
The other two games are not Super Bowls.
Are more recent. Okay, right. The other two, I would guess, are more recent, but it doesn't have to be, like, Because it doesn't have to be, but I would think in today's day and age, the way that they set things up now, maybe more so. Okay, how about this? Was there three people in the booth in the Bills-Texans game down in Houston several years ago?
No, that's a good guess, because there probably could have been. That was Joe Tessitore and Booger McFarland. And wasn't there a third person? So
no, because usually, yeah, I'm thinking about how they. I'm thinking of the operation, right? I'm playing the operation of which networks had these. So where would these where would these guys come from, right? And how would you do it? Bills Ravens, Bills. No, you got Tony, and you got. I don't think that would be the case. How far back is it? Fairly recent for any of these?
They're both in the 90s. No, by the way, these do not also include the new world of officials being included in the the broadcast team. Former officials.
How about Bills Dolphins, Doug Flutie getting sacked by Trace Armstrong at the end?
Correct. Al Michaels.
Because that's also an ABC game.
That's also an ABC game. The Molds game. Michaels, Dan Dierdorf, Boomer Esiason.
Okay. That's how I'm trying to play this here. Are all three ABC games?
Yes.
Yeah, because ABC. Okay, so the last one that I'm going to guess was Bills, Dolphins, the Tim Tyndale game at home.
No, that was ABC. That was Mushberger and Vermeil.
I'm so impressed with myself to know these networks that carry these games, though, by the way.
You got to know the networks. You got to know the networks.
You got to know the network. That's right. Wow, Dick Vermeil did that game, huh?
Dick Vermeil with Mushberger.
Dick Vermeil did that game. No, I can't.
It is ABC, though. It might be the only other one.
It is ABC. Wouldn't be Bill's Steelers the week after the comeback.
Nope.
Okay. Oh, boy.
Three-man booth.
Home run throwback.
Right. That was the ESPN Sunday night crew from those years.
Right.
Mike Patrick, Paul McGuire, and Joe Theismann.
Mike Patrick was really good.
I kind of thought that he lost it, but I liked his voice. He had good energy. I thought he was fine. He was fine. Mm-hmm. Late, I got annoyed with him, but I get annoyed with all of them. Do you have a favorite in this category? Who was your favorite analyst or anybody that would have broadcast one of these games?
I don't know if I'd say favorite analyst. For me, I'd go to the play-by-play guys, and not even necessarily their style or who they are or what they, you know, how they go about it. But when I think about Bill's games and the voices that are indelible in my mind that are just like, okay, I do think about Marv Albert, and I do think about Don Criqui. So those are the guys that, you know, right away, they kind of come to mind for Bills games of that era. So that's probably where I would go just because they're so comfortable to me.
Love it. I remember Peter King once wrote, like, nobody watches games for the announcers. I 100% watch games for the announcers. And when I'm picking one of these old games to turn on, if I don't like how it sounds, I don't care. I won't watch it. It doesn't matter if it's the most famous Bills win ever. If I don't like how it sounded, I won't watch it. Criqui, who broadcast many NFL playoff games in his day, never got a Bills one. Marv Albert got five. Is that a surprisingly high number for you? It is for me. He had five Bills playoff games.
That's totally surprising, just knowing that, you know, in that time period. Criqui did not get playoff games. What he did get was the 88 game that the goalposts came down when Fred Smirlis blocked it and then went to overtime.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
He was on the call for that game in Buffalo.
I was busy running around.
That was Criqui and Trumpy, I believe.
Yeah, they were together. I was busy running around on the field, so I did not ever watch that
game.
Were
you on the field, really?
Oh, yeah. I can't find it anymore, but a huge piece of the net.
Wow.
The field goal net used to have a huge piece of it.
I am just learning this today for the first time ever. That's amazing.
Yeah, and I had like a Halloween mask on. It was after Halloween, but it was close enough maybe that I had just this weird ghost mask on. And I mean, that's a different lifetime. Jim Nance is closing in. So I don't know if we necessarily associate Nance and Romo with the Bills in the playoffs, but they together have called seven Bills playoff games already, including the last five.
Wow. No, I didn't know that.
You know, like that's when this, I did this work this morning and it just jumped out at me. Like they've called the last five Bills playoff games. The last one they didn't was the Patriots game in the cold. But they also had the AFC Championship, of course, the year before that, and they had the game in Jacksonville. And that probably was a big deal that Nance and Romo got a Bills game. Who knows how many they'd even had that season? It wasn't like the Bills were good in 2017, but they did get the wild card game in Jacksonville, the first of seven games they've done, and it won't be the last that we see them again.
I think they could do the very first one this year, because even though it's going to be a 7-2, I think, to me, if it's Denver, like my guess is if it's Denver, it's going to be 1 p.m. Sunday. And I think that will be the CBS game.
I think there will be two CBS games this year. Okay. I think I read that Fox had two last year and CBS gets two this year.
Okay.
So maybe they're both on Sunday. Maybe it's Saturday, Sunday, but there's certainly a chance at it. You're right. All right. Well, Happy New Year, Sal. Thanks for your time today. And we'll talk again with Bulldog back on Thursday.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Happy New Year to you and your family. Happy New Year to everybody listening.
Sal Capaccio on the Westshore Hotline. His appearance is brought to you by New York's only Outlet Liquor. Your place to buy a case, Outlet Liquor. What's your outlet? I should have given this a few more minutes to go back into the 60s, because I know some of those playoff games in the AFL were televised, but they might have been local broadcasts, and I really don't know. The website that I use for all this, it's called, and I have to always check, gridironuniforms.com. If you're into the trivia of it, it's what teams wore in every game and network, and so maybe trivia about the game, and also who were the broadcasters. And so gridiron-uniforms.com for all that. When I looked up, I believe it's the four. I think the Bills had four postseason games in the 60s, and no announcers were listed on the site. So I mentioned Brad Ryder giving me this text the other day. It just lit me up. I was so excited to hear from him and think about all this stuff again. And Brad even told me today that he has notes. So he has an agenda. I think that that's probably doesn't sound as good as having notes, but I think Brad has an agenda, and I, for one, am excited about it. Brad next. Paul Hamilton next hour. The Sabres are in Dallas tonight. Winter Classic is today coming up. Blues and Blackhawks from Wrigley Field in just over an hour. So we'll get the Sabres update from Paul and then Ross Tucker at 5. Happy New Year. This is Mike Shope on WGR.